I'm Joe Amato. I'm here with Nathan Kennedy and Tyler Baker. And guys, we got a good episode today. We're going to be talking about a classic horror movie, which is Silver Bullet. But before then, before we get into that, any crazy crap going on recently? Anything you can think of? Because I know we always just usually spitball and go everywhere before we get into the actual show.
It's hot as shit outside. I mowed the yard and sweated my ass off yesterday. Okay. I'm ready for it to cool off. I know Tyler's not because we hung out yesterday, and every time we got out of the car or left the store, he's like, oh, this humidity, it feels great. And I'm like over there just struggling to breathe. I'm like, oh, this is miserable. Tyler loves it. He loves hot weather, and I can't. I
give winter like two big middle fingers, man.
Winter sucks too, but you know, like 70 degrees, 60s, 70s, and that is the ideal temperature for me. I can't stand this 90s, because I think with the heat index, it's going to be over 100 here today, and it's just Joe, I know you hate the heat.
Oh, well, I mean, just because there's no relief except being in the house. I ain't got no pool to go to or a big ocean or any lakes to jump in, so I'm stuck in here. But no, otherwise, yeah, I can bear with it. It's fine. But you know what? There's somebody that's in the chat room. I've never acknowledged him, but I've never tried to say his name because I know I'm going to butcher it. So he's our buddy that's always doing the crazy Photoshop jobs for us, turning us into people. I'm going to attempt this. I'm going to butcher you, buddy. I'm sorry. You can correct me. Maybe it's Giannis Huizing. I'm sorry, but thank you for joining us in the chat room. And I am so sorry if I destroyed your name.
I sent him a message, and I was like, can you pronounce it for me? And he sent me an audio clip, but just with the accent and everything, I heard it. And I'm like, I still don't feel comfortable saying it because I know that I will butcher it as well.
He's laying up and right. He's like, damn it. And he's laughing at the chat room. Buddy, I wanted to at least acknowledge you. I didn't want you to ever think we're ignoring you. But at least everybody, if they see this, like, okay, I know who Joe's trying to say. So thanks for joining us each week and for all those Photoshop jobs.
Yeah, man, the Photoshop last week, I'm sure not too many people saw it because Tyler was like, oh, God, if people see this, I'm. But it was beautiful. He put us on that.
Oh, I knew it was coming. The minute we even talked and mentioned to Wong Fu, it was just countdown. 3, 2, 1, and then boom, we're all drag queens. Yeah.
It was fantastic.
Yeah. I was proud of the Swayze spot there. Like, yeah, I like being the Swayze of the podcast there.
Yeah. And it'll be interesting if he does one for this week. I was like, can't imagine who's going to be who. I mean, am I going to be the werewolf because of the damn mask or something? I don't know what's going to be.
Yeah, and Nathan can be Marty, and I'll be Uncle Red.
You can be Uncle Red. As long as he doesn't turn any of us into Jane. So that'd be pretty terrible. Like, oh, no.
To be Jane at one point. Maybe Nathan could be Jane.
Please don't do that. Do not make me Jane.
Now that you said it, he probably
I was John Leguizamo on the other one. Can't get much worse than that, really, but.
Oh, that's true. But no, yeah, so we decided we would talk about Silver Bullet. This is, for me, I know that you two, I think you said American Werewolf in London is definitely your top pick for your probably favorite werewolf movie. As for me, this was just mine. I mean, not only just because I grew up, you know, I was probably, I don't know if I was around the same age as Corey Haim, believe it or not, is when this movie was made, but it was just a good connection, you know, just kids. I'm a young kid. And as for things, obviously not the werewolf shit, but family things that happened in that, I related to, you know, in that movie. And as I got older, things I kind of reflect back and can relate to. So it's always had a special place in my heart, you know, heart is Silver Bullet. But it's my number one pick. But I can pass it to you, Tyler, if you want, like, you know, your first thoughts and your first, I guess, introduction to Silver Bullet. And then, Nathan, you could go from there. But what about you, Tyler?
I caught it halfway through on TV at my buddy Matt Hilton's house when I was, I think, in maybe middle school or maybe late elementary school. And just from the second half to the end, I thought this is a really interesting werewolf movie. And that's when Matt, who was a big Stephen King fan, had told me about that it was based on the book Psycho of the Werewolf by Stephen King. And that made it pretty intriguing because I saw it out the book and looked at the awesome kick-ass artwork that's in that book. like one beautiful illustration of the werewolf attacking in each chapter. And then you realize just how drastically different the book is from the movie. But, you know, it's the movie. So it was so good that the werewolf itself, I mean, it's a bit lackluster when you do see it, but the movie is done so well. And the way it's shot, the way the werewolf's hidden, and the point of view that's used, the creepy music, and everybody's very convincing acting that they're scared as hell of whatever it is that's attacking them. You forgive how lackluster, like the man in the bear suit looks at the end of the movie, because it's
hell. But even earlier though, when showing him, I mean, still as a kid, it was enough to frighten me. I mean, he did look quite convincing.
By that point too, I'd seen American Werewolf in London. I'd seen parts of The Howling. I had seen the Chuck Connors Werewolf when I was 3 or 4 years old.
Oh, those are super frightening versions. Yeah.
Yeah, I'd already seen quite a few, but I had liked the movie so much that it really just didn't bother me. Yeah, I only pointed out just because some people it may not bother them at all, and it doesn't bother me when I watch it. I only point it out because, I mean, I think you'd be blind to say that the werewolf in it is the definitive on-screen werewolf.
I
like to hammer home, because whenever I hear people discuss movies and they start picking it apart, and I don't feel like they're giving credit to everything else, you know, I really want to hammer home, it doesn't take you out of the movie. It really doesn't. No. I know we're jumping to the end here, but I'm just saying that my impressions of the film, I loved it. I thought Gary Busey was great in it. I liked Corey Haim. I thought Jane was hot when I was a kid. Like,
oh, really?
Man. I thought Jane was hot when I was a kid.
Huh.
Yeah.
I guess you weren't a big fan.
I disagree. It reminds me of Billy Madison.
Yeah, okay. So I guess it must have been because Nathan didn't see this as a kid. He must have saw it, you know.
No, actually, I saw it later in life. It was actually you that recommended it. And I went and just... I picked it up on the cheap. You're like, you haven't seen Silver Bullet? Just go buy it. And it was like, I think at the time it was in the dump bin or, you know, one of the Halloween displays at Walmart. It was very cheap, so I picked it up and watched it and enjoyed it a lot. And that was quite a while ago. That was probably
after high school, or right out of high school, or somewhere around that.
I think it may have been a little bit past that, but yeah. It's definitely been some time. But my impressions of it, it's such a breeze to watch. Like, it's an intriguing story, and the runtime is about an hour, a little over an hour and a half. But it just, no time wasted. At a loss for words. It just, the flow to it is just really well. Scene to scene, the transitions, the building up, the anticipation. And Corey Haim is kind of a damn shame, because he was a really good kid actor. Like,
yeah,
the believability in his face, the innocence. It's a shame that as he got older, you know, all those things sort of just took their toll on him for whatever reasons. I imagine he saw like a ton of shit, and the other Corey talks about it all the time, that they had a lot of issues and these older guys were like getting them addicted to stuff. And that's a damn shame. But Gary Busey's fantastic. He's easily the best character probably for me in the film. Tyler, you're probably going to agree with that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But it just the atmosphere, even though it's slightly cheesy when they're going on the hunt for the werewolf and they're going through the fog and they're all getting picked off one by one. I really like when that guy gets brought down and then it comes back up and it's sort of just basically like a rubber mask, and the thing comes down and drags him down again. Once you've seen like American Werewolf in London and The Howling, the creature in this doesn't look as impressive. So I can see where Tyler's coming from there, but that still doesn't take away from it. I think it still looks great.
No. Cause they're two, I mean, you're right. They're two completely different kind of movies. And I think one definitely is there to really freak you the hell out with American Werewolf in London. Most definitely with that, where, you know, the werewolf and the whole look of the movie. This one, you know, they're trying to add, is like how Stephen King does, the small town stuff, sometimes family stuff. So in a way of kind of keeping it somewhat to where everybody can watch, but still kind of freak you out, you know, like not overboard. But hell, you got to think about how the way the movie starts. When you think of Arnie, you know, the guy working on the railroad, the drunk, I mean, they show him get decapitated. You know, that was slash, and bam, the head goes flying. So it started out right out of the gates like, wow. But, You're right. Some parts were toned back. They were trying not to show the werewolf too much until, like you said, the big kind of epic reveal, you know, at the end when you see all of them and everything, and they're like, eh, but it still worked. But yeah, there was like a lot of the kills, you know, we seen like when he's, you know, attacking the woman that, you know, wanted to commit suicide, you know, they got pregnant and everything. And you see the slashes and, you know, the intent of biting. You never see the actual biting into her, but you see the leaning. But you see a lot of slashing, but then there's the parts where later you see like, okay, he does this epic transformation in front of, you know, Joe, in front of the, you know, the cop, and he uses the bat. The peacemaker, it's like, oh man, that wasn't, I mean, you know, here's the epic transformation. And he uses the bat instead of using his claws or slashing him.
Well,
so,
the book tears the sheriff's face off.
See, like, that's what I mean. It's like,
it's beautiful. And he just grabs a hold of the sheriff's face while he's in the cop car, squad car, and it starts tearing the skin off. So when you see that, you know, I mean, granted, there are things I liked in the movie more than what's in the book, but the book, there's more kills in the book. I mean, there's kills going on. I mean, from January, December of the following year, whereas this takes place in the spring and then ends in Halloween. But that's when I think the more creepy scenes is what Joe just says is the young lady who confronts her husband or slash boyfriend, whatever he is, and tells him that she's pregnant, and he's like, it ain't mine. He leaves her. Then you feel really bad for what happens, because, and that's where good storytelling makes up for, you know. And I like the fact you don't see the werewolf; you see the slashing on her body, the bed's being torn apart, and just the fact this woman is sitting there crying. Her mom's downstairs playing the piano, and she's working on suicide of taking too many pills and killing her and her unborn child because she's brokenhearted that the man she cares about won't stay and help her. That makes it really sad. Just know that. The Reverend, which makes you wonder, because throughout the movie, you get the Reverend is aware of what he is, but it's almost as if like he is, you know, he knows what he's doing and when he does it and who he does it to.
Because he says in that scene when he's walking up to Marty when they're in that little bridge tunnel, he was just like, she was gonna take her life, and that's the ultimate sin, and she was gonna go to hell, but I saved her. So yeah, he definitely knew what he was doing.
Yeah, and see, that's a thing. He tries to justify it, but then you think about other kills that he done, especially to Brady. It's like, what did the little kid do? He's flying a damn kite, and you kill him? You know, it's like, yeah, I guess, I don't know. They try to justify some things, but maybe it's just him caught in the moment. Because, hell, you think about when he was having the nightmares of everybody in the congregation turning to werewolves, and he wakes up and he's like, God, please let it end. You know, it's like he wants to die. He probably just is, he hates being this werewolf and killing people. But there's probably some just insanity of just the conflict of him wanting to end. But, of course, that werewolf taking over and making him doing this killing and him trying to rationalize it or justify it.
Yeah, it does. Like, I mean, I'm sure there are some douchebag, you know, fanboys who do podcasts and stuff that will just spend the whole time trying to tear this movie apart and make a lot of smart-ass remarks and think that they're witty when they're just some prick with a But, you know, and I think that's what makes it fun to think about is the counterbalance to Reverend Lowe, excuse me, his method of thinking that, yeah, like, why attack this young boy that just stayed out too late flying his kite? His justification for killing the drunk, you know, Arnie at the beginning of the movie, the young woman who was pregnant. I mean, just it almost, you know, kind of, I've often wondered too, you know, that when she's doing that and he goes to her house, almost as if like maybe she went to him, to the Reverend, in confidence, and told him what she was thinking, that she's like, I don't know if I can live anymore. He was like, how does he know this woman is in her house this very night? You know, it's almost, that's what I like to think, that she went and talked to him in confidence before she decides to do this.
Yeah, it's possible. Yeah, that makes sense.
And he realized that, you know what, this woman's very damaged. She's not going to take my advice. So when I transform tonight, I'm going to go seek her out and kill her.
Yeah, maybe there was probably like a lot of that stuff, because it seemed like everyone in that town went to that church, you know. Yeah. So maybe he did just kind of overhear a lot of things, or maybe they came to him in confidence about stuff.
Or like Marty's girlfriend's father. Like, And that's something is still to this day, I tried to come up with logic of why he hangs out in the garden shed underneath it and just shakes the hell out of it. You know, and apparently it's been going on for a while just to get the father out there who's been watching NWA wrestling.
Yeah, I like that. He got all pissed off. He's sitting there drunk watching wrestling. Who's interrupting my wrestling?
Breaking my pots, I'm going to break your ass. What did he say? Like, busting my pots, I'm going to bust your ass.
Yeah. He kept saying that about, like, busting ass. And I was like, all right.
But I just tried to find, like, you know, even as a kid, like, why would the werewolf be going out to this garden, hiding underneath it, and just shaking it to, like, draw out someone? I mean, it's just kind of one of those things where you almost feel like that the powers that be behind it. And I'm not sure how true it is because I haven't done a whole lot of behind the scenes research, but the director of The Beastmaster, Don Coscarelli, mm-hmm. was the original director on this film and was replaced by the guy who we see the credit for. And I don't know, like I said, I don't know. I may be corrected on that, but I just kind of wonder like where the thinking was in that scene, you know, the logic behind the werewolf hiding out there. Of all the werewolf movies you've seen, from bad ones to good ones, that's a scene that to me I can't find the logic in it. And I would love to ask Don or the current director or Dino De Laurentiis or anybody or the original script, like, why the hell is the werewolf? You know, because it's you know, you feel for the guy. He's out there drunk trying to stop whatever's out there messing on his property, and then the world bursts up, and then he gets impaled on that, and then obviously torn to pieces underneath. But it's something that I've just never seen a werewolf do in any other movie, to just hide underneath a guard. Am I the only one? Like, when you guys
I understand. No, I knew exactly what you're talking about. I was like, but what is he doing there? It's like, okay, he's not eating. I really don't understand what it is, unless, like you said, maybe with him knowing everybody in the town, maybe he knows the guy's a drunk, maybe he knew, or possibly the guy is abusing his daughter or doing something to her, so maybe he went out there, and once in a while when he was in whatever precarious mood, maybe he decided to go to the shed and shake it and figure, when is this guy going to come out so I can kill him? You can picture him. He's like some guy hiding, like me, waiting to scare somebody that never fucking comes. And he's there shaking, like, come on, is he going to fucking come out today? And then finally he comes, like, yes, I can finally kill the guy. I mean, I don't know the logic, but...
if we're going to follow along the lines that the people in Tarker's Mills have confided to Reverend Lowe all kinds of various things, which is why he... attacked, but then he goes and attacks Marty on the bridge for no real reason other than the fact that he's out probably when he shouldn't be, setting off fireworks by himself where there's no one around, so he can't hurt anybody. So that's where you kind of feel like, you know, you almost feel like Reverend is just kind of bought into the fact that he's letting this animal instinct take over, and it doesn't really matter who he kills because he kills Brady. Now, early in the movie, you see Brady's a bit of a troublemaker. You know,
but worth getting killed. But you're right. I know what you mean.
In the one scene. But maybe that's just, to me, if you like the movie, I think it's fun to find logic in some of the stuff that you're not given too much explanation in, because then it's fun to think about, why did this happen this way? And with it being, the werewolf.
Well, picture that. What you just said, Tyler, does make kind of perfect sense. Picture if, like you said, people confide in the Reverend. So the Reverend first knows certain people that, all right, these guys are doing things that I do not like or don't agree with. So then he finds a way to obviously be around these people at whatever times. And then when the werewolf takes over, then the werewolf obviously kills. But then there's other times when he might just be about, like you said, randomly out somewhere, and he turns into that werewolf just maybe on a random hunt. Hell, he could have been in the, like, say, the forest or the woods hypothetically to kill some, just an animal. Maybe he was going to kill some kind of, like, deer or anything. But on that time, Marty's shooting out the fireworks, it might have caught the werewolf's attention where he turned and sees him, and then now it's a bigger prey. So Marty might have just been a random victim, whereas the other ones, it was premeditated where he knew, I'm going to eventually get these people, and I'm going to stay there until I turn into the werewolf and kill them. You know, you wonder what kind of madness goes within his mind.
Oh, obviously, I'd like to think, too, that the Reverend Love is just nuts in general. Like, he, when he's not the werewolf, he probably comes off as a very good man. But obviously, he's aware of what he's doing. And obviously, when Marty sends him the note in the mail, you should kill yourself.
That always gets a good laugh out of me, just because it pans over his shoulder and you're just like reading it and you're just like, oh, all right, yeah, okay.
Yeah, sure.
But just go kill yourself.
man, if Reverend Lowe is really a man of God, and that's what makes it so interesting. I give credit to Stephen King for making the werewolf a preacher. I think that's an excellent, you know, plot device to have someone who pushes and preaches the word of God is the ultimate enemy, is the ultimate evil in this small town that looks this man as a man of faith, and that we can confide in, we can trust this man to lead a great, healthy and spiritual life, and yet he's the guy that's going to go around killing everybody for a multitude of reasons. So it's almost as if like he's all right with the fact that he goes around killing people. And, you know, obviously the man's got to be nuts for him to get up in front of a congregation each Sunday, maybe Wednesday, to do Wednesday, you know, church to speak to these people, knowing full well he's the guy going around killing people, killing young children. You know, the guy's got to be nuts, period.
Yeah, he's probably just sitting there looking at him. It's like, oh, you taste good. Ooh, you really taste good.
Oh, yeah. Or if he sees people in the congregation, he sees like Brady's like, you know, picking his nose, wiping it on the pew in front of him. Like, I've got his number.
You know, right. He's coming.
You know.
Well, Tyler, you've read the book.
I haven't read all the book. I just know all of what's in the book.
Okay. Well, I'm kind of curious then if there's a little more explanation, if it kind of gives us the answer of this is maybe, you know, he knows, you know, whatever direction we're going in with that.
It's been so long, and it's not a long book. I don't know why the heck, because I guess maybe my phobia of reading a lot of times where I just feel like I'm really not gonna read this book.
I'm afraid of books.
You know, it's just one of those things I was just too lazy. Like I've read maybe a handful of books in my life, but that's one book I really should have read. I remember Matt said it was a great book. Derek, my brother, he liked the book. I look more at the book and the artwork, because the artwork is absolutely beautiful. Werewolf attacks. I mean, there's one of it's like the second kill in the book, I believe, where there's this woman who's expecting her lover to show up, and the werewolf is outside her bedroom window, and she's kind of out of her mind. You don't know if she's like high on drugs or something. And sees the werewolf outside and lets the werewolf in, and the werewolf pounces on her. In her mind, she's thinking she's being greeted by her lover, and of course, the werewolf kills her in bed.
Well, she must have really been on drugs, unless she has a hairy boyfriend. Like, what the hell was she thinking?
She says, like, love is like dying. I think that's one of the last things she says, like, in that chapter. That's what she says before she's, you know, killed. You know, it's an interesting part of the story that, you know, would have been pretty messed up to see in the movie, which, you know, I still would have liked to have seen what that would have been like. You know, they could have gotten a really hot, you know, 80s woman with like really big hair and a beautiful tan body. And she was like, you know, caffeine pills. It's like, she's like Jesse Spano or something like that. And she's so excited. And she, you know, lets her lover in, and then boom, you know. But
when you were talking about your book phobia, I had to just Google it real quick. I'm like, is this a real thing? And yeah, bibliophobia. The fear of books, but also refers to a fear of reading or reading out loud in public.
Oh, no, I am afraid of reading out loud in public. I'm not afraid of reading books. I've read Arnold's biography. I read Jaws. It has to be so. I read Wrestle Crab, The Death of WCW. I have read books. It's just got to be something that really pulls
me. No, I understand that. And yeah, I have I had that fear of reading out loud in class, because I'm like, what if I'm reading and I fucking fart?
Yeah,
stutter on my words or something, and all the hot chicks in class are just like, oh god.
Yeah, it's a terrible thing, but it's just laziness. That's why I didn't recycle the werewolf. It's just sheer laziness. I own up to it. I was just too lazy to read it, even though it's a short book.
I would like to read it now, actually.
Yeah, I mean it's an awesome. I mean, like, if you Google these just real quick from the book if you can.
Yeah, well, if it's because. Umbrella, there's a company called Umbrella that put out a Blu-ray release that's region free, and the cover for that is fantastic. It probably looks like the cover of the book. I'll go ahead and attempt to Google it real quick. Yeah, here.
The book may give a little bit of explanation. I'm not going to pretend like I know, because I don't know as to what. I know that, you know, it's like Marty's out trick-or-treating and sees the preacher for the first time answer the door, and sees him missing an eye, you know, because that was something that Marty did. That's in the book as well. Like, he goes out trick-or-treating with his Uncle Red. And in the picture, I do remember Marty's wearing a Yoda mask. And the preacher is kind of like this kind of elderly man, kind of, you know, I just kind of like a nothing like Everett McGill in this movie, where you know, Reverend Lowe's a thin kind of well put together. He's the bad guy from, you know, People Under the Stairs, you know.
Gotcha.
You see him in the book. He looks nothing like what you'd expect, like this kind of small, frail preacher entering the door with an eye patch. You know,
oh yeah, really, there's funny. Actually, this isn't the cover, but there's too much glare right here. But yeah, there's the picture that you're talking about.
Yep, that's it. Pretty cool.
I guess what you just said in the book, showing him a little more frail. That's the thing that's, I guess, was genius about this. Anytime we watch a movie, of course, when there's the killer, you always want to guess who could that killer be. And I'll admit, as for the Reverend, that was something that never popped into my mind. And especially with that whole dream sequence he had and how he woke up then with it in. But him having nightmares of all these werewolves, you know, they obviously made it seem like, oh, God, well, it ain't him, because he's frightened of these werewolves now. And, you know, he's figuring what's going on in the town too. And for it to turn to be him, it's like, that was pretty cool. The only time I think, well, it was pretty much right towards when it was happening, is when Jane is going around town looking for everybody to see their eye. And then when she shows up there with her, all the bottles and everything, and he's sitting there working in the garden, and you only see part of him as he turned. I was like, oh my God. Then, of course, I'm like, okay, it's got to be the Reverend. Up until then, I didn't have a guess, but right.
Yeah. I was actually going to ask you guys when you were watching, was it just sort of immediate that you knew who the werewolf was?
Not me, not at all. Especially as being a kid when it first came out and at the age I was at, never. But I've always, even at that age, I would guess, I think this guy's a killer. I think this one. The Reverend never popped into my head. And when it was shown and it played that music when they showed him finally, I was like, oh my God, that got me. It did.
Now, I think right when we started watching, Matt had told me that the werewolf is the preacher. I thought, oh. Well, it didn't spoil it to me. To me, that made it really intriguing, because I had never heard of of a character being portrayed like
that. I would have been pissed. Oh, I would have been pissed. You know, well, no spoiler, Joe, like, here.
Well, we're halfway through the movie, so I'd already missed most of it anyway.
Okay. But, for that aspect, yeah, then I understand.
But he had told me about that and showed me the book and everything, and I just found it to be really intriguing. You know, it didn't kill. That's one of the few times where, I mean, Nathan spoiled Iron Man 3 for me, and if he hadn't spoiled it for me, I probably wouldn't have been able to sit through it.
That's great.
Iron Man 3 wasn't that good. Neither was Iron Man 2. The first one was the best one.
Better than Iron Man 2, but I still don't own either one of them. I'll never see Iron Man 2 again as long as I live. And Iron Man 3, it was fine. It was passable. It had some good moments, but overall, it's not something I've ever sought out to watch again. There's some stuff, you know what, I don't mind on occasion. This was one of those things where it just didn't. But I was just more intrigued to watch it more because of knowing that the werewolf was the preacher. And I'm trying to remember now if Matt showed me the book first, because he showed me all the artwork that was in it. And then, or maybe we saw the movie. I think we saw the movie first, because then I think he bought the book afterwards. But we were both pretty obsessed with that film for a while, because we just, you know, it was just like an impressionable story. I loved it a lot, would rent it some, and Derek liked it. My dad liked it. I think it's one of the, it's a heavily underrated film in general, and definitely an underrated werewolf movie. I think because you got such good storytelling, good acting in the movie, a good creepy score. Yes, I've never liked the idea of the werewolf using a bat to kill its victims, like even out in the fog and then killing the cop. It was just, you know, it's like, why the hell? I mean, obviously the werewolf can think and knows what it's doing. If it's going to, it's like, no, I'm not going to tear you apart. I'm going to take a baseball bat and smack you in the head with it, you know?
Yeah, especially from starting off. The first thing you see in the movie is a decapitation. And then when you're figuring, you're finally seeing the epic transformation of this werewolf, you're like, oh my God, we're going to see him maul the hell out of Joe. And then nothing. It's the damn bat. You're right. That was the part that was so that was anticlimactic, you know, climatic.
Mind like the dead body that pops up with his face being mauled off. I don't mind it. I can let all that stuff. Doesn't bother me. I appreciate good old school, you know, special effects.
I wanted a cop mauling. I wanted to really see him maul that cop.
Oh yeah, or at least imply it, like he did with the pregnant woman at the beginning of the movie, or like when Brady's dead. To me, I find that almost as effective, if not the same as effective as the pregnant woman's death, is because all you see is because on VHS you can't tell what the hell is it,
like, right? Just,
and then you really got to pay attention when Brady's father goes over and you hear him pull the cover off
because all the pieces, yeah,
yeah, and you just the actor who plays Brady's father, and plus you know Sheriff Howler, the guy who played Stoutfall, he was in Rocketeer, was Howard Hughes, and he was in that show Lost. I can't remember.
Oh yeah, he was Locke. He was Locke and Lost. Yeah.
Yeah, but he does such a great job. Like that music and all you that kicks into gear, and you see the blood all over the kite, and he's just you know repeating the Lord's Prayer. I believe it's what it is. And
yes, he was Holy Mary, Mother God.
Yeah,
you know, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it just really intensifies what the hell happened, you know. And you don't have to see the corpse and how bad it was. Their acting and the music really hammers home that whatever happened to Brady had to be pretty vicious. I mean,
yeah, you didn't need to see it. You sure didn't want to because you figured they'd never show up on a kid like that.
I mean, less is more. I think, I mean, it's, you know, seeing children die in horror movies, you know, it's pretty unsettling, but it helps amplify the tension and the terror of what you're dealing with in the movie. You know, that's why I think it's good that it doesn't happen too much, because I feel like it would be a cheap, it would become cheap and worthless if it happened in a lot of horror movies. So, but when it does, it's effective. It makes the situation a lot more scary knowing that no one is safe. No children, nobody. Like Alex Kittner in Jaws. And I had another example in my head as I was talking there. But with this too, it makes it quite frightening. And knowing that the minister is aware of all that he's doing and decides to attack this young boy, chases him to the gazebo at the park and just tears him apart. Like chewing on it, tears his throat out.
Who knows? Yeah,
right. You know, it's just...
You're right, though, with the acting. I mean, it's all believable, and especially with the younger, you know, obviously with, you know, Jane and with, you know, Marty. Sometimes you get movies where they have the kid actors, and they're just, eh. You feel like, okay, it's working for the movie, but it's still not believable. I mean, these were two believable, you'd see, say, characters as brother and sisters. You actually could feel like there was, like, this little bit of, you know, conflict with them. You know, she feeling like she always has to watch over her paraplegic brother, and she's always the one that no matter what she does, her parents are going to blame her for something.
I hate her parents in that movie. God, they, I mean, that woman, that I swear, their mom is the queen of PMS. Jesus, man. She's constantly bitching about something.
Yeah, and then, you know, like you said, and then when, you know, Brady and Marty, especially Brady, plays the little prank, and then she falls, and she's all muddy and tears her panty.
About yeah. that too, you know, you're a teenage girl, you're flirting around looking for boys or girls, whatever.
Your brother with his friend, and then you want to blame him too, but it's mainly his friend. And you know, that whole moment when they're back in the house and she's sleeping and she hears the sound and she acts like she's sleeping, and he brings some money to pay and he apologizes. I mean, it felt like it was a real genuine moment. Like,
help make. I mean, because it's not a very long movie, but taking time to establish your main characters. Like, it's good that, you know, we don't focus that much on the parents other than that the mom is a bitch and the husband just goes along because he has no balls, you know, and that's we're focused more on the kids. And that the moment like that, that helps sell that, you know what, I can buy their relationship. It's a bit troubled at times. She's frustrated because the burden's always put on her, not burden, but the responsibility of taking care of Marty. And if something goes wrong, she gets blamed. I blame that on the parents. That to me is just overprotective, poor parenting in that movie. And I'm not a parent. I'm just watching, you know, just observing. And I mean, and Gary Busey makes such a great point that even though all the mom sees is that he's a drunk bum uncle, probably can't hold a job. He's been divorced a few times too. I believe they hint at in the movie. But when he says there's more to Marty than you, just him not being able to walk. And I think that probably hits her because that is what she, that's how she carries on.
Well, yeah. Well, because he also says to her too, it's like, all you do is pick him up and put him on the shitter and pick him up and put him in his chair, you know? So,
yeah, just, it's a good point. And you can clearly tell she doesn't want to hear that, but it clearly sounds like that's all she's become is just a robot who's all about my boy leaving, you know, you can't do this and you can't do that.
And which is probably why when you see it, he loves. No, you're right. And which that's why you can see that's probably why he loves his Uncle Red so much. As Uncle Red comes around there to treat Marty, well, just like any other kid. He's sitting there, he's playing cards with him, he's telling him jokes, you know, he's doing stuff, he's buying things for him, he's loving him as much as he can. And like you said, because Marty, with his mother, you know, his parents, but especially the mother, like you said, just maybe coddling him too much and treating him like, you know, he can't do anything. And, you know, then she goes on her little speech about, oh, you're just blowing to, you know, town once in a while, you know, tell a few jokes. But no, that's stuff Marty needs, you know. That's why, he again, you could see the connection with him and his Uncle Red. Because when Uncle Red comes around, I guess Marty feels like I can be treated, you know, normal for once, at least by somebody in his family.
And not only that, but get a complete overhaul and upgrade to his wheelchair situation.
Which, what kid, what in the hell? I was always skittish about, you know, go-karts and stuff as a kid, just because I just didn't do them that much. But man, that was an awesome looking ride that he.
Yeah.
That thing went really fucking fast too.
Yeah. And I'm sure it was, you know, there was no, I mean, that probably was built to go that fast too. I mean, just like when they put it together, I mean, it looked awesome.
And honestly, one of my favorite scenes in the film is they kind of like that chase when the Reverend's in his car, yeah, chasing him down, getting beside of him, looking at him, you know, like the tension in that. And he looks down, he sees he's running out of gas, and then he thinks he's lost him. But, and then, you know, he's there, he's out of gas now, and he can't walk, so he can't go anywhere. And then that car, you know, you see through that little hole, that he just pulls up, and you're just like, well, where's this going to go? So effective. That's what I really liked about this movie, is it had all those moments, and the music, the score, and it's fantastic. I really like the synth music that's in here. And it's amazing to me, because when I have went and looked at reviews, like, there are a lot of people that just think that it's really hokey and don't enjoy it. And I really don't understand that thought process.
Wow. I guess that's why I don't like looking for reviews and things. I never noticed that. I just knew growing up, everybody I knew loved the damn movie. And it's a shame of what you just said, people putting it down or giving it a bad review. It's like, rewatch that and really look at it in a different light, instead of wanting to be so harsh and judgy on everything. I mean, hell, like when you're talking about that scene of that abandoned, you know, bridge, when he went into that, I remember how frightening it was where it went in there and bam, it's conked out. And then, like you said, you see the Reverend, you see his car, and you're wondering, how is he going to get out of the situation? Then you hear that, like, tractor or whatever in the background, and he starts yelling for Mr. Zinnerman. I think his name was Zinnerman.
Zinnerman.
Yeah, he's yelling for Mr. Zinnerman. I was like, oh my God, is he going to hear him? He's going to hear him. And he finally took it. I was like, I was never so happy to see a farmer, you know, save somebody in my life. You know, it's like, you felt this, oh, this relief. Because otherwise, you're right. You're like, you're holding your breath. You're frightened. You're like, oh my God, is he going to kill Marty right here? It's like, it worked. Everything in that damn movie worked, beyond things that would frighten you, but just the relationships with people in the family. You know, I can't picture people hating that movie, but I guess, you know, you can't love everything.
But I'll, you know, it's just, I'm sure all of us at some point are guilty of, I mean, hell, I've told Nathan and others, I don't like Pulp Fiction. I've watched it 3 times. I can't understand why the majority of film fans hold it in this such high regard. But I'll tell you, Silver Bullet is a fantastic film. And I just feel like, you know, I think all three of us look for different things in films. You know, we can appreciate the lowest of the low at times. We can also appreciate some of the generic mainstream at times. But I think all three of us tend to connect all together for the most part on what we're looking for in films. And I think, you know, if you have to like the acting, you have to like the story, and you can forgive a few things that may not make too much sense, or a plot hole here that doesn't really take away, but it would help if they had addressed it. Whereas, you know, when I watched, you know, not all of Tarantino's films, but a lot of them, I just kind of feel like it's just a bunch of hot air, you know, with just bluff that's supposed to be cool and artistic and yet stylish. And like,
man, if we start losing some of the subscribers, I'm gonna blame it on you saying all this stuff. Well, right, I'm just kidding.
Well, let me say real quick, I just did want to say hello to Jake Juggalo and Who That Whale in the chat room. Thank you for joining us. And also, Jake Juggalo, just want to let you know, Tyler, he said Pulp Fiction is a masterpiece. So you got one person that is going against.
I just feel comfortable with, like, you know what? I don't sit there and just tear it apart like I do, like, you know, the Transformers films or some of the current Marvel and DC stuff. I just, you know, I've watched it all the way through, and I just can't quite understand why it's just always celebrated as one of the tentpole films in cinema history. Like, there's certain films that I'm like, okay, I get why people put that on their list, you know, as like the top 100 films you should see before you die kind of thing. You know, my list would be, it wouldn't have a single Tarantino film on it. I do like Kill Bill 1 and 2. But I'm just saying, you know, people who are like, going back to what Nathan was saying, people who are, you know, taking a point to write a review about Silver Bullet and saying it's silly and hokey, I almost feel like, are you not looking at the basic story here? You know, it's almost like the simplicity of the original Wolfman and the old Universal Monster movies. They're not supposed to be these in-depth Christopher Nolan, you know, scripts where they're just like, oh man, it really makes you think. Like, I don't want to think when I watch a werewolf movie. I want it to be simple. The simplest movies are often the best movies. Jaws and Predator, two examples. It's a simple story, but damn it, man, both films are unbelievably effective.
And I love that.
But the good story.
You're right. I love that they can do not only just telling you a great story, but also doing things that within a movie where obviously, yes, there's no real life werewolves, but putting real life situations, like we said, with the relationship with brother and sister, and then the nephew and the uncle, and even more as to say, you know, the uncle with his sister having the brother sister relationship. You ever wonder to see how they argue, and then how Jane and Marty, you know, they have their little arguing, but to eventually, hopefully, then grow up one day, and like how she said at the end, you know, end of the movie, I love you too, Marty. But it's, see, here's the thing where I talk about the connections. Not only did I just love the movie in general, but then as life moved on, I see more of a connection. Me and my sister, who, you know, I have an older sister, we kind of argued when we grew up. You kind of had that thing where you didn't get along, and watching the movie even as a kid, you know, I wondered, I don't know if I'd ever feel comfortable saying that to my sister, I love you. It was just something I couldn't say. It was something I couldn't say to many people, and I always wondered, would I ever be able to? And you fast forward years later, and of course now we get along, and I can feel comfortable saying that to her. With Uncle Red, my nephew, I used to love giving him horror movies to watch. I mean, he was, God, Jesus, four or five years old, and I already got him started like when I was young, and he's watching movies like this where he's peeking through his eye, and it was just a good thing, a little connection we had, and here came Silver Bullet, and I would tell him corny jokes, just like Uncle Red, you know, would tell Marty the corny
joke. That
was
a good joke, though. I told my mom that joke one time. She didn't know what I was quoting. She thought it was quite a funny joke.
No, and it was. I loved it. But, I mean, you know, there's kind of the uncle thing where the uncle is supposed to, you know, be telling the corny jokes. So I would tell him other jokes. But also remember trying to – I was always looking out for him. And I'd buy him things and making sure he had stuff, just like Uncle Red did. And so that's something I noticed as I got older, another connection I could relate to as – life moved on. So there's a lot of personal connections with me in that movie, besides just loving the damn movie in general with it being a great story. But I like that a movie can have that. It can have something that maybe anybody could relate to. You know, they didn't have to do that. There didn't have to be these personal moments or things to make you think, hey, I have this with my family. So that's what makes it even better and more believable, is this is stuff that you can actually have within life. With, of course, the movie with a werewolf, which don't exist. But it just,
hey,
for me.
Hey,
movie,
hey, you do not know that.
Like, you don't know it, and Nathan just starts turning right in front of us. But Nathan, I feel
he's
like I've been rambling.
Wallace and says, I'm going to show you something to make you believe.
Exactly. Like, oh my God, we suddenly get 5 million, 10 million, and it becomes the highest thing on YouTube. But I'll go to you now, Nathan, because me and Tal, I know, have rambled a whole bunch. But go ahead, give some of yours.
I mean, as an only child, I cannot relate to any sibling rivalry whatsoever. So I wish I would have had a younger brother to torture and leave behind for the dogs and run away. And
Nathan definitely would have done that.
Because that was what Tyler's story, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's, I will say, I mean, it's me and my brother both are comfortable saying, I love you to each other. Like that's something we've never had, you know, issues with even as youngsters. You know, because we would make up relatively quick. We never would hold on to grudges for long periods of time or anything like that. Because, you know, we just felt like, you know, things are so much better and we just patch things up. So, so like when I would see Marty and Jane just argue all the time a lot, you know, I just kind of felt like that's not how me and my brother were. We it was pretty much just roughhousing, and Derek gets hurt, so therefore he wants to tell on me as if like I intentionally hurt him so he can be satisfied knowing Tyler got in trouble. I'm like, I didn't do it on purpose. That's the kind of stuff that we had, you know, that and swapping cards with him so he would never know that I got his Cobra Commander card. you know, or
I couldn't do it
backyard, you know.
I just couldn't. I just could never do that as a kid. It took me, I don't know, maybe to when I was around 30, believe it or not. When I turned 30, I think that's the first time I ever said that to my sister.
Wow. I kind of see where you're going with that, because honestly, I was kind of the same way with my parents. Like as a kid, I would tell them, but then as I got older, I kind of stopped, and then it was almost kind of uncomfortable to say it to them. But then as I got older and then eventually moved away, like then it kind of came back around and it was easier. So I see what you're coming from with that.
I kind of picture parents are like, just say, Nathan, you don't have to tell us you love you, okay? Let just start, okay? Like when I went up and hung out with Nathan for the first time, I was thanking his parents for everything they were doing. Like, thank you for dinner, thank you for the ride. Nathan's like, you don't have to thank my parents for everything. That's probably why. They're not used to be appreciating gratitude. And here I come along for the first time. I bury Nathan in one evening, making it look like he doesn't appreciate a damn thing. And that's probably where they're just like, you know what, Nathan, don't even try. All right. We got more from that boy that you know from school in one night than we have in 17 years of raising you in our damn house. Probably what happened.
No, I do remember, though, that my mom was just like, he's very, very, very polite. Like, he thanks us for just everything. I was like, yeah, he's weird.
He's weird. I'm not inviting Tyler over anymore. He's making me look bad.
I remember that too. Nathan just, I think it was in the back seat. We were coming back from something, and or when we got to Nathan's house, it's like, you don't have to thank my parents for everything. You're making me look bad here.
Well, yeah, because he was just like, you could just see him. It looked like he had an altar boy outfit on. He's just like, oh, thank you so much for dinner. Oh my God. And like, oh.
Nathan's wondering why Tyler got a bigger Christmas gift than he did from his parents. Like, how the hell did this happen?
No.
I was glorified looking at Nathan's stuff that he had, you know, because Nathan, in his eyes, he was like, yeah, I remember getting that. Yeah, I have that. And then he would only take pleasure knowing that I wanted it and couldn't have it. So therefore, Nathan's like, oh, you wanted that, huh? Yeah, that's a shame. Hey, you remember that gift that I got for Christmas that you said you wanted too? Yeah, I got two of them. I ain't going to give you.
Gotta keep one in the box, man.
Yeah, I just... Just one of those things too, where I just was, you know, I just always thought it was great. Nathan had all this, and then, you know, I guess, I mean, I had a lot of stuff as a kid too, but it's like everyone around me had even more stuff, you know, and that's just what made me appreciate, you know, tracking down stuff that I never had as a kid, or kept me hunger for He-Man stuff and Thundercats and Turtles and G.I. Joe and stuff like that too. So I was just, that's sort of the way my parents raised me. I just felt like, and to this day, I just like to let people know, people don't have to do anything for me, from holding the door open to say, hey, how you doing today, sir, or doing a nice gesture. Like Joe and Nathan don't have to say thank you or do something nice for me. They don't, but when they do, I like to know, let them know that, you know, I appreciate them. People who listen to this podcast, they don't have to tell us they listen to it. They don't have to listen to it at all, but when they let us know they like what we do, or they love this week's episode or last week, you know what, I appreciate that, because no one has to do anything for you in this world. Total strangers, family. I just like everyone to know that I appreciate everything that's done for me. And that's just my way of thinking back then, which just kind of got me ostracized. And probably that's why Nathan made fun of me so much all the time. He's the guy that thanks everybody. He probably thank a girl for a blowjob too, you know.
You should do that. I mean.
So of course, I understand. Nathan would probably sit there and just say, I'd be so grateful for every damn thing, as if like I'm like, oh my God, thank you so much for doing that. Thank you for pleasuring me. My nipples are so hard right now. I don't want to thank you for that very thing right now.
But no, it was just funny when he was at the house, because it's like we had dinner. He's like, oh, thank you so much. And then we would be sitting there just randomly, and my parents would either like come into my room or just passing by, and Tyler would just be like, hey, thanks again for having me over. Like just constantly, like just at random. Thanks again. It's like, you just keep doing it. So yeah, I'd have to give him shit for it, but it's good that he was that polite. I mean, my other friend, like they would do it too, but Tyler always made it, I want to say mean more. Not mean more necessarily, but just
he was showing how it was done, what you should be doing, Nathan, right? Basically, what you should have been doing.
Yeah.
Taking for granted.
You're not.
It was just, I really wanted to thank his parents, you know, for because his parents would, they would drive us here or take us there, or they get us food or whatever. And I just always wanted to say, you know, thanks for, you know, intensifying hanging out with your son, because it was always a blast hanging out with Nathan, and his parents would do nice stuff for us. And I just was always appreciative of other people's parents too, you know, that when I would go hang out, I was like, you know, thanks for, you know, letting me come over. And, you know, it's just, I'm always appreciative of everything. You know, some people, but I just like to know that, hey, you didn't have to do it. And I thank you for it. So that's just how my parents raised me. And that's how I like to continue.
Tyler is a good human being. So yeah. I just had to give him shit for it when we were younger, because I just gave him shit for everything. Any little thing I could find.
God, it was over He-Man. It was LeBron James. It was working out. It was like, I take blueberry steroids. I mean, it's everything. It was
like, oh, man, he had like this huge ass container of like the, I guess, protein powder, right?
And it'll explode.
Yeah, like, and explodes in the name. He'd be like, I gotta go to the bathroom. You just hear him like just taking these massive shits, just like. It's like the air horn in Inception trailer or something, man. Like,
what
just
happened to the podcast? What's going on? Some massive shit. So it's like, I don't even know what's happening.
Oh, and it smelled so bad. Oh, it's terrible.
Compared to how Nathan would fart, it would smell like rotten fruit and like dirty people. Like, it was just
Tyler, to coin Tyler's phrase, he'd be like, it smells like pineapple and little kids. I'm like, little kids smell like farts?
Dirty, like kids that don't bathe, they always stink and they smell, you know, like the smelly kid in class. That's what Nathan's fart smell like. It smelled like rotten pineapple and dirty kid in class. That's how I said, because it was just god awful.
But he got me back when he started taking that blueberry explode or whatever the fuck it was called.
And Nathan called my blueberry steroids. Like, oh, Nathan, time to go get his blueberry steroids.
Yeah, we'd go to the mall and he'd go into Vitamin World. Just like sauntering in there, he's like, yep, know what I gotta get. And the people like know him by name and everything, because he's in there like every week.
Dude, you're walking me again. Oh, yeah, yeah. I got
it. Yeah, yeah. He's just.
That's crazy.
It's like everyone's like stereotypical, like how I walk, as if I walk like Pauly Shore and Encino Man, you know, or something like that, when he's making fun of the bully in the movie. I forgot what his name was.
But, well, I mean, you know, you're getting some praise in the chat about the Explode's awesome pre-training and stuff like that. So.
Nathan, I want to ask you, who is the person who made the comment about the Explode's awesome pre-training? Can you say his name? I didn't know who that was.
I do not know. I can't pronounce.
Can you try it?
I can't pronounce his last name, but I'm kind of with you. I want to say Giannis.
Okay. Just had to do that.
I need to go listen to that audio clip. Maybe with these headphones, I'll be able to hear it better. Send me another one too. Maybe I can kind of. We're gonna figure this out. Well, because
I know how that happens. With, like you said, sometimes it's just hard. You know, when there's another language, then it feels like we're forcing it. It's like our buddy, that, you know, some people always call him Dusan or Dusan, and I always say it's Dusan Mitrovic. When I say it, I feel like I've completely changed the way I'm speaking, like I'm trying to speak in another language, so it feels forced. But it happens. But Silver Bullet, back to that. Like I said, that's a movie that I love when it's really dark. I like watching it at nighttime. When it's Halloween, that is one of my Halloween movies I watch. I'll always watch the first Friday the 13th, even though it's not my favorite. I watched first Friday the 13th.
Is there a like that on the first Friday the 13th, man?
Yeah, so I watched the first Friday the 13th, the first Halloween, first Nightmare on Elm Street, and Silver Bullet. Those are my four Halloween movies. It's like a tradition. I have to watch those on Halloween. I'll spread it throughout the day with one in the morning, afternoon, and at night. I'll do two of them. It's my Halloween movie, basically. One of them.
See, I can't, when Halloween season comes around, I can't really watch horror films during the day. I feel like I have to watch them at night. Otherwise, I kind of...
Yeah, if it's in the day, I know what you mean. It feels kind of like it's too bright. The atmosphere is like gone. But if it's dark, it obviously works perfect. Or if it's a rainy and cloudy day. Like I said, The Goonies, when you guys are talking about The Goonies, that's my rainy day movie, is The Goonies. It works. For whatever reason, it works.
I put Silver Bullet up there in terms of I'll pick Silver Bullet over The Howling.
Yeah, I would too.
Yeah, I just, Howling's got great special effects. It's a good movie, but I just always American Werewolf in London. Jack Nicholson's Wolf, because I think that's another underrated werewolf movie.
Yeah, you don't hear much of that. Yep.
No, it's a kick-ass movie. It's really, really good.
And Wolfen. Wolfen is on your list as well. I know it is.
But man, no way.
Tyler and I rented Wolfen, and we were expecting something, you know, kind of in the same vein as all the other werewolf films that we watched, and it was just completely different. And man, that was what, like 2001, 2002? I need to go back and watch it, because I did come across the copy on DVD, and I picked it up. But there's the one scene in particular that Tyler and I always joke about when he just jumps out. Yeah. And his balls are just flopping around everywhere. And I'm so glad that we've cracked Joe up so much in this episode. Look at him. He's just like completely.
Well, you're waiting for like this, the actual wolf thing, you know, creature to take effect. And we're just, you know, Castillo from Miami Vice is running butt ass naked, shaking his balls and in soft wiener around, you know. It's like, oh my god, man! It's like, I don't want to see that in general.
Let alone in a book. Yeah, I know.
You know, but like, why aren't we seeing the wolf? And it was just, we didn't even finish the damn movie, because I remember seeing on TV as a kid and was intrigued by it, wanted to see more of it. So when we went to the old rinky-dink VHS store that was still around where Nathan used to live, they had it, and that was one of the first films we rented. We stayed up, I think, or we woke up early the next day and started to watch it. Like, god, this movie sucks, man.
Wow.
And that's just one of the things that we used to make fun of. Like, Nathan would act like he's running around naked, like Edward James almost, you know. It was just, you know, something we just never forgotten. Completely unnecessary. I was like, I don't want to see this, you know.
Jesus. Well, I was going to say,
I'd rather just watch The Howling and watch the really hot brunette turn into a werewolf while she's having sex in the woods, you know.
I like that. Yeah. No, yeah, no doubt. Most definitely. Real quick, Who Dat Whale in the chat room said his Halloween movies are A Nightmare Before Christmas, which you guys will hate me. I've never seen that movie in my life. Hocus Pocus.
There's a shocker.
Yeah, Hocus Pocus. I've never seen Hocus Pocus in my life. And he said,
"Oh my god, Joe!"
Yeah, and then he said,
"Focus."
And then all of the Elm Street movies. Girl. Oh, I have seen So I haven't seen those two you said, but yes, all the Elm Streets, any of those damn movies, even the ones that aren't the best, still works. Just like Friday the 13th. There's some misses in Halloween, some misses in Elm Street, but I could still watch them all. Even like I said, I've learned to appreciate Halloween 3, which as a kid I hated because of no Michael Myers, but now I get it. I understand it, and it works for its own standalone movie. So
yeah, as its own thing, it's pretty damn good. But Hocus Pocus, I don't hate it, but I
don't know who's in it. I'm
the one that likes Hocus Pocus or that has seen it.
Oh. Yeah, I guess. Well, I mean, I've seen it a handful of times, but I don't really like it that much.
Oh man, I love that movie. It's a great kids film. You know, it's a fun film. I think it's definitely one of the last good live action Disney films that they ever did.
Well, so, who Dat Whale says I got kids? I'm like, yeah, that makes sense.
But I don't have kids. I own it proudly in my collection here. I don't have kids. I don't watch it that much, but
And the guy whose name that nobody can pronounce said, like, watching Critters with Easter or on Easter. Yeah, I guess I don't know if I'd have that connection, but I love Critters. I love the damn Critters.
Well, I like watching The Purge in the summertime because it takes place, you know, in beautiful like spring / summer weather. So I always associate the Purge. I could watch Purge here, but it's a movie I associate with watching in the summertime because like the weather appears to be very warm and they're all hanging around outside, you know, nosing around, and it's just that's I just think of that. And so, I mean, I don't have like a go-to list of films at Halloween. I mean, it's kind of whatever strikes my, I'm like, you know, I'm in the mood to watch this or maybe watch that. It's just kind of whatever I'm feeling, you know. They're really good for year-round stuff, but it just kind of goes with whatever I haven't watched. American Werewolf in London is one I do at least watch at least once around Halloween. I just kind of always get in the mood for that because it's the greatest werewolf movie of all time, one of the greatest horror movies of all time.
And a movie that we were going to lump in with Silver Bullet, but also a movie that Joe has only seen once, maybe twice.
Yeah, haven't seen it much. Someday we will, but hell, you got to think for Halloween. Don't know if Tyler's going to want to join us on this one, but upon our recommendations, Nathan has ordered Raw Head Ricks. Oh man.
Hey, you told me that I needed to check it out. So I bought the Blu-ray on Amazon this week. Haven't watched it yet, but I think I'm gonna watch it tonight. So Joe, I'll send you some messages, kind of give you a little bit of what I'm thinking and how I'm feeling.
All
And
right.
yeah, then I guess I'll take it over to Tyler's place and strap him in the chair and do all Clockwork Orange and have his
Yeah,
eyes
that's the
wired
only way
open.
you're to only way you're to get him to sit through and watch that, because otherwise ain't gonna happen. But
I'll just be sitting there watching it and he'll be like, "Say something funny. Just come on, make it funny."
I can picture, you know what's funny? I've never hung out with Tyler, obviously, in real life, but I can almost picture him through that movie, just looking with his face, just no expression, kind
You kind of how
of.
he's sitting right now,
Yeah,
honestly.
it's just like not enthused, like when will this shit just end, and not really care. I can almost picture that. I'd love to watch it one time. You might have to record Tyler as you're watching a movie just to show his fucking movie. I could picture that.
You know what? Actually, what we could do is Tyler could come over here and I could set up a broadcast like this and get a chair right here and I can put it in the player. I'll probably have to upgrade a external Blu-ray player right here.
Record
Play
him
it
while you're, yeah.
and we can just record some reactions while he's sitting there watching it. And I'll just be like, ha 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 while he's just sitting there just like
I'm sure, yeah, he'll be entertained. But, well, like I said, Silver Bullet, it is a fantastic movie. If you guys have not seen it, you have to see it. And if you were kind of critical on it, maybe give it another shot. Maybe you still won't, you know, it'll still hold the same opinion on it that you did before. But if nobody's ever seen it, it is a movie worth watching. It's a great movie, and it's yeah, like I said, it's one of my favorites. I really like it. I'm not putting it in a top 10. You know what's funny? Sometimes even people say, "Man, I'll put that in my top 10 movies of
Well,
all time." And I always,
people throw those things around so loosely. Like I would
yeah.
say, I mean, there's a lot of films
Picture
that
that.
really hammer down, put them in like a top 20, top 10, top five.
Yeah, because that's hard. Picture when people say, "Man, I'll put that in my top 10." I almost sometimes want to put somebody on the spot right then and say, "Okay, give me your top 10 right now." Because that's a hard thing to say. There are tons of good ass movies, but when you really would have to pick, that's a hard thing.
I mean,
Think about
I've
that.
got my top four films down, and it's been like that for years. It's Predator, Jaws, Batman 89, and Ghostbusters.
And then to go into others, you're right. It gets difficult when you're trying to get those others to make that 10.
Yeah,
You're
I mean,
going through hundreds and hundreds.
First
Yeah.
Blood Part Two, Rocky Two, Willow, RoboCop, Karate Kid. You know, those would be around that. You know, Point Break, Bloodsport. I mean, movies that
I
just
mean, there's
really.
so many good ones. There's
Yeah,
so many.
but that top four has been like that, and I told Nathan that the live action He-Man movie gets its own wing in my Hall of Fame. Like it's separate from the actual movies because it's separate for a reason because He-Man is the greatest, like period. So that's why the live action movie is not in my top
So,
ten.
it's like this. So
It's
Tyler has his,
its own wing, own separate
right.
wing in the Hall of
Tyler
Fame.
has what you call, like, if people would ask, Tyler has his top 10. And then if people would wonder, where's Masters of the Universe? He would say, there's a difference. I have my top 10, but then I have my Holy Grail. This movie stands alone by itself. Like, all
Yeah.
right. Yeah.
And that's where you would walk in and see this bronze statues of like Frank Langella and Dolph Lundgren's He-Man and Skeletor in this wing. And there would be like, like a cloud motif kind of on the floor,
You have music playing in the background, some
even
really.
dressed up, it feels like playing harps,
Yeah.
because you've walked into Master's Heaven here.
A little waterfall in the background,
Yeah,
just
the
everything's like.
waterfall. I have beautiful women in togas, just kind of dancing around and, kind of being kind of promiscuous and risque and
Just
stuff
for
like
no
that.
apparent reason. It's like, what the hell is this
Well,
room?
who the hell's going to question beautiful women in togas walking
Exactly.
being risque,
And so, I mean,
If
you want to be like,
question
what
it, I
is
want you to
this
get the hell
room?
out of my wing,
Right. It'd be just, that would be a room. But, well, go ahead, Nathan. How'd you want to wrap us up then?
I'm just thinking about his top his it kind of seems like the WWE Hall of Fame where it's like here's Hogan and Andre and all these guys and then you got the celebrity wing with Kid Rock and
No, you go to hell. Ain't no celebrity ring. Wing. Well, no, ain't nothing like that. God, don't you dare compare my Hall of Fame movies to that lame ass excuse for a Hall of Fame.
with Bob Barker and Drew Carey. It's like, what the hell is
Yeah.
this about? What? This
No,
doesn't
I don't. To me, there is no WWE Hall of Fame. It does not exist. You cannot have Bob Uecker and Drew Carey in the same Hall of Fame as Bret Hart, Shawn Michaels, and Hulk Hogan. You can't have that. So to me, it doesn't mean anything. Anytime they announce, hey, they're finally going to induct Rick Rude into the Hall of Fame, well, who gives a rat's ass? It doesn't mean anything when you got Drew Carey in the same Hall of Fame.
Well, it's its own separate thing. It's like how you have Masters in its own separate class.
It's like, what the hell kind of analogy is this? It doesn't even make sense, the analogy.
It's just Nathan trying to piss on my glory of my appreciation for the He-Man live action. But that's
no, awesome. I think it's a fun film.
It
doesn't touch anywhere on anything on any of my lists, but it's enjoyable. I like it. It's most people wouldn't say that. Most people are like, that movie sucks.
Yeah,
I'm sure you guys probably get, because in the community of Masters, isn't it kind of?
No, it's
polarizing. That's a thing that, Tyler and I have spoken of before, and hell, we could do a whole podcast about it. But that Masters of the Universe movie, it's polarizing. There's many that completely hate it to the core, some that love it to the core, those that just enjoy it, and then there's people that have come around, those that judged it really harshly, when they were a kid, but when they watched it when they were adults, they're like, you know what, I can understand it for what it was, I know what their limitations were, budget-wise and special effects, and they kind of enjoyed it, but some still don't like it, but it's very polarizing.
Yeah, I'm one of those people that came around to it. At first, I was like, yeah, this kind of sucks, and then I came around to it, and I'm like, I like it, it's enjoyable.
But anybody that says that, Orko and Battle Casting, I mean, you've got the brain of ice.
Oh, wait a second. Just to let you know, I'm the guy's name who we can't pronounce in the chat room, which I won't butcher. Tyler can't read the comments, so he was not directing that at you. He did not know that you just posted no Orko, no Battle Cat. He did not know that. So you don't have the brain of an ice cube.
I'm sorry, but I don't support fans that this
could have been worse timing. He's like, fuck it. He's like, I'm never.
I don't, and I appreciate him being so devoted to this podcast, but when people say that, it just really sounds like everybody's just copying what everyone else is saying. Like, so you can be slamming the film, you say, there's no Orko and Battle Cat. It just comes off as like, as if, did you even watch the movie, or did you just...
I can picture him, like, when I lost it that one week, and I was like, that's it, and I'm done. Like, the podcast is over. I can picture him saying, that's it, done with this show, no more Photoshops, I'm out.
No, now you're just going to get Photoshopped on Jane. You are going to be the one that goes on Jane.
If you listen to Fans of Power, I praise the hell, I slam people who say the same thing about no Orko, no Battle Cat. Oh, God, it's the dumbest film I've ever seen in my life.
No, he was just saying as a kid, it disappointed him that it wasn't there, which I'm sure it was to most kids when they were watching it, because you're watching the cartoon when you know that there's a movie, you kind of have that expectation if you're going into it blind.
I bought everything that film gave me the first time I saw it when I was 4 years old. There was not a single thing that I questioned or wondered about.
Hey!
Not one time. I say that.
One second. Would you? I it's not going to be a whole commentary, but how about that as a different twist? Would you want to do Masters of the Universe, the movie, next week here on Beyond Retro and discuss it, all the thoughts of it, and then we can discuss everything that we're talking about now, what other people have said in the chat room, but that would be different because I'd love to hear from you, Nathan, on that end of it.
So, no, that would be probably, I was telling Tyler, I was like, I would like to do this on the show at some point. I didn't know when it would be. All right. It is done. Tyler will sit and just, oh man, Tyler's going to get so fired up and pissed off. It's going to be awesome.
This would be great, yeah. So definitely,
anytime I YouTube anything about the live action movie, doesn't matter whether it's a commercial for the three figures released to coincide with it, TV spots, people who do reviews, and they're like, oh my God, the movie's so stupid, I'm the nostalgia critic, and I make fun of everything, and I talk like this, like, you don't know jack shit about E-Man, so don't even bother.
It'll be fun. Next week, it's gonna
people
be fun.
Saying the same damn thing.
Tyler's still just going.
Tyler
jumped into next Sunday already.
Just bottle it. Bottle that up, Tyler. Put the cap on that and just pop it. Next week, we're gonna pop right into it. So you hold all that intensity, definitely. All right. So go ahead.
Any final thoughts, Tyler, on Silver Bullet before we get into the closings?
Heavily, heavily underappreciated and underrated as a horror film, and definitely as a werewolf film. It's the werewolf genre itself is it's doesn't have a whole legion of great films. Of course, you could say that about vampire films as well. You know, everyone has their favorites, but it would probably be in the top. Well, probably top three for me in terms of like werewolf movies. I would put it up there, and just probably have to put Wolf at number three and Howling at number four, just because I like Silver Bullet. I like the acting. I like the story. It's an enjoyable, fun horror movie that you could watch anytime. It's a safe horror movie to show to somebody who's probably a little bit skittish or squeamish about horror movies, whether it be a buddy or a girl that may not be. It's a comfortable horror movie to watch that, you know what, you don't, if they get scared of it, okay, can't help it. They're scary as the horror movies, but it's a safe horror movie to show in the genre. Where, like, I wouldn't show American Werewolf in London to somebody who's scared as hell of horror movies. Silver Bullet, I probably would show because it gets the point across, but without the gore that's in Werewolf in London, you know.
No, that's a fair assessment. I agree with everything you said and everything that Joe said. It's an overlooked film, and I feel like people that shit on it before should give it another shot. It's Corey Haim and Gary Busey in their prime, despite, you know, Corey Haim's passing and, you know, how his later career just sort of went off a cliff. And, you know, people now with Gary Busey sort of just associate him with, he's really crazy. And I've seen him on these shows where he was addicted to cocaine and booze or whatever, but.
Yeah, we've seen him in person.
Yeah. He is just as crazy as
in person is, you know, the stories you hear, like, it's all true. So,
but yeah, that's those two guys in their prime doing their thing. And it's just a fantastic little movie. It's quick to watch. And as Tyler said, it is kind of safe. Yeah. It has moments where it's kind of gory, but yeah, that would be
gonna hide their eyes because there's nothing to really, you know, oh my God, I can't watch this. It's just, it's a good tension builder.
Yeah.
You know, it's a gateway to someone. If you're going to show a girl a nice time and watch a horror movie together, Silver Bullet would be a safe movie to show her or something like that. You know, not Paranormal Activity 4 that you got in the dump bin at Walmart.
Yeah. We were looking at the dump bin at Walmart yesterday and they were like, I keep pulling them out and I'm like, how many of these fucking movies do they make? Because we pulled out part four and then there's other ones that aren't even numbered anymore. And I'm like,
graded cut of part three. Oh, look, here's part five. You know, oh, look, here's number six.
Yeah, it's a shame. But
piece of shit.
Yeah. Anyway, yeah, I guess I just jump into the closing bits because Joe kind of keeps hinting at it a little bit. I see him and we kind of.
Oh, yeah, we got to wrap. Joe's got an engagement here.
Yeah. But thanks to everyone in the chat that joined us today. If you're new to the channel, make sure you hit that subscribe button and click that bell for the notifications and click on the links in the description below. The Facebook page, give that a like. Email us, beyondretro84@gmail.com. Leave some comments. Let us know what you thought of today's episode. What are some of your favorite werewolf films? Because there might be some that you like that we didn't even touch on in this episode today. So, yeah. It's a good time. I like this episode a lot.
And thank you everybody for joining us in the chat room. And JSP, you were late, but it was good seeing you right there at the end. So see you next week, and hopefully we'll see you next week live. So
for Masters of the Universe.
Yes.
Live action film. Tyler's going to be so angry. It's going to be fantastic.
I ain't going to be angry with you guys. Just be angry about, you know.
He's going to yell at everybody in the chat. So all you guys just be prepared.
It'll be fun. So it'll be see awesome. You guys.
See you next week.